Hello again. We're working on our course in the Synoptic Gospels. We've looked so far at the historical Jesus, at the Jewish background, at introduction to exegesis and exegeting narrative genre, at the authorship date characteristics of the Gospels, at exegeting parables, at the Gospels as literary works, and most recently at the Synoptic Problem. This session we want to take a look at the geography of Palestine, including the geography of Jerusalem. So, let's jump in and have a look at that. In order to have a good overview of what's going on in the Bible, whether it be in the New Testament or the Old Testament, and in the Gospels in particular, it's desirable to have a handle on the relevant geography. For the Synoptic Gospels, this is that of Israel at New Testament times. I want to look first of all at the physical features of Palestine, and on a large scale, there has really been little change in the basic geography since New Testament times. So, as it stands now, is basically how it was then. We want to first kind of survey the major regions of the territory from east to west, and then we'll look at the more minor features going from north to south. So, the reason we look at the major regions from west to east is that the major geographical structures take the form of bands running north and south. And so we will list these here, starting at the west or the Mediterranean coast and moving eastward to the desert. The direction of prevailing winds is also from west to east. And since on the west we have the Mediterranean Sea, these winds carry moisture from the Mediterranean and then begin to deposit it as they come inland as the ground rises also, and causes the air to rise, and the air then to become saturated and drop its moisture. So this will help us understand the climate of each region as well. The first region running along the coast is the coastal plain, and sometimes called the Plain of Sharon. That's not the whole of the coastal plain, but that's a good bit of it. This is a very low, rather flat plain, which is fertile where it's not too sandy or too salty. From a military perspective, this area was easy to travel on so long as you didn't get too close to the water where the where chariots or horses would tend to get slowed up by the sand. And so this area was easy to invade from outside country. The large-scale geography around Israel is Egypt to the south, and Egypt for the period of the Old Testament was a major political power. By the time we reach New Testament times, it had been under a foreign domination for many centuries. Then the coast there, because of the rainfall, was fairly fertile, and that runs upward and then turns over into the Tigris-Euphrates Valley and comes down this way. So we've got a shape that, although not exactly crescent shape, was called a fertile crescent. And typically the big military powers in the Old Testament period had been out on the other part of the fertile crescent, had been Assyria, Babylonia, and Persia. And then after Alexander's death, a Seleucid piece of Alexander's empire was also there as well. So invasion would often take place, and the invasion could come rather easily in on the coastal plain, either from Egypt in the south or Syria in the north. Going in then a little further from the west coast, we come to a series again, a north-south region, more or less, that is somewhat higher, somewhat more rolling terrain, though it's still pretty low relative to what we're going to call the central hill country here, which will be our next item. With these rolling hills and wide valleys, most of the travel was along the valleys, and this area was still relatively easy to invade. It was also fertile and got decent amount of moisture as well. The kind of central region of Israel, Palestine, etc., is what's called the Hill Country. And this is a region of rather sharp hills and V-shaped valleys. If you're from the United States, this is perhaps rather like West Virginia in the eastern U.S., although its climate would be more like, say, Southern California, what we call a Mediterranean climate. Here, because the valleys are very sharp-bottomed, and because they've got rock in them and usually intermittent stream of some sort in them, a travel does not typically take place along the valleys, but rather up along the ridges. No particular thing interfering with travel in the coastal plain, except perhaps where you crossed a stream coming down to the Mediterranean Sea, and therefore might get some swampy land. The lowlands, or the, I don't think I gave you the name before, Shvelah, was more rolling, and you could travel on either kind of territory. But here in the Hill Country, you really needed to, at least for vehicular traffic, travel at all, need to travel up on the ridges, and even for foot travel, that was the better way to go. This is therefore more difficult to invade. The invaders had to go uphill to get into the area, and did not find it easy to use chariots, which were the, which we say, the equivalent of tanks, I suppose, in ancient warfare. Farmers did not find this area nearly so nice for farming, and yet because of the way the material was structured, it was basically a limestone. There was a tendency for it to form terraces as you go up strata were basically horizontal, and so at the edge of a hill you would have a little piece stick out, a little piece stick out, and basically the farmers manipulated this by putting rocks along the outside edge and letting soil build up, or perhaps even helping soil build up along these. Not great terrain for growing grains, but they did grow grains in it, but pretty good for growing olives and grapes and things of that sort. And on the west side of this hill country, where you had the moist air coming in from the Mediterranean and flowing up the hill, you had good moisture, good rainfall. So rather nice there. Unfortunately, when you reach the ridge then, the air having come up off the Mediterranean and having dumped a certain amount of its moisture, typically as it goes up the ridge, you now come over the ridge and the air begins to fall. And falling air warms up, and that means that the relative humidity goes down quite substantially, and so it's not likely to rain. Typically you get what's called on the east side of a ridge like that, you get what's called a rain shadow. In the United States, that phenomenon typically shows up in the Rockies, where you get pretty good rainfall to the west, coming and with prevailing winds from the west, as we have as here in Israel. All that's from being in the temperate zones, where the prevailing wind is out of the west. When you get over the edge of the Rockies and start to drop down, you get the same thing, a warming air, drying air, and so typically rather poor rainfall east of the Rockies, which would be the valleys up there, say around the Great Salt Lake, would be a nice example of that whole area that's a very dry area. Well, that's the same situation you get here. So the rainfall is good in Israel west of the main ridge, but poor to the east of the main ridge. Then coming down off the hill country, we reach a north-south region, which we call the Rift Valley. And you might have heard of that name in terms of missionaries in Africa or something because there's an important rift valley in Kenya as well. It's actually part of the same rift system. The rift we're talking about here in Israel runs from up in Lebanon, down through the middle of Lebanon, runs through the Sea of Galilee, runs down along parallel to the Jordan River. Actually, the Jordan River runs in the Rift Valley, runs down past the Dead Sea, and then down to the Gulf of Aqaba and the Red Sea there below it. And that's not the Red Sea. That's the, anyway, Gulf of Aqaba, and then runs on down and runs into Africa. So it is a geologic rift due to two plates on the continental plate system that's been discovered and worked out in the last now 60 years, approximately since the 50s. And in this particular case, this actually is a rather deep fault, and at the Dead Sea, the surface of the Dead Sea is actually over 1,000 feet below sea level. Surface of the Sea of Galilee is about 600 feet below sea level. And this air that has been coming from the west has come over the rift, over the hill country, and come down to that. So you get very little rain in here. But you do have this river that rising from the north, which we'll talk about the mountains up there, will help water the area. The climate down here is typically very hot and very arid away from the river. So in modern times, it's been irrigated to have crops, and at least some sort of irrigation was going on in some places in ancient times as well. Well, we keep moving east, and we have one more territory to think of. We have the Mediterranean, we have the coastal plain, we have the Shfelar, or low rolling hills, we have the hill country, we have the Rift Valley, and then you come back out of the Rift Valley and you come up onto what we call the Transjordan Plateau. And it turns out that the Transjordan Plateau is actually higher than the hill country, so that the air coming back up again is a cool off and actually squeezed and dumps a little bit more, almost all the rest of the moisture that it had in it, which it wasn't dumping east of the ridge, because the humidity of the air was too low. Now the humidity comes back up, it does dump the rest of it, but within a few miles after you get up on the Transjordan Plateau, that's all gone, and you're out into what would be kind of the northern part of the Arabian Desert, or the Syrian Desert there as well. So pretty well watered at the west edge, but very deserty as you get a few miles in east of that. So that's a quick tour of the territories running north and south, and we're coming in from the west. So the Mediterranean, the coastal plain, the rolling country, the Shfelah, the hill country, the valley, the Rift Valley, and then the Transjordan Plateau. Now there's some smaller features that it's convenient here to look at going from north to south. And so if we go up north of Israel, we come fairly quickly just to the east of the Rift Valley to the highest peak in the Palestine area, up over 9,000 feet above sea level, and that's Mount Hermon. It's the southernmost large peak in what's called the Anti-Lebanon Range. The Rift Valley, as I say, runs up out of Israel into Lebanon, and you have mountains to the west side of the valley that are called the Lebanon Range, and mountains to the east side called the Anti-Lebanon Range. The top of Mount Hermon is generally snow-covered all year, and if you're up in Galilee in clear weather, you can usually see a little bit of that. Coming south from that, we come to the area around the Sea of Galilee, which is called Galilee, the circle of territory or something of that sort. This hilly region is kind of, in some sense, an extension of the hill country down in Israel itself, except there's a thing that separates there. So it has some of the features of the hill country down in Judea, such around Jerusalem. But this is the best watered area in Palestine. Not only do we have the situation where the water coming in from the moist air coming in from the Mediterranean dumps its moisture on the hills as you come in eastward from the Mediterranean, but you also have a latitude effect going on here, that we're getting near the bottom end of the temperate zone, and so as you go down south, you get into an area where there's rather low rainfall. But up in Galilee, we have pretty substantial rainfall. This is about equal in rainfall to the eastern United States. So in the 40 to 50 inches per year rain, you can convert that to metric system if you'd like. It's higher in the north and lower in the south, so we've got Upper Galilee and Lower Galilee. The climate is reasonably cool in the mountainous part, but as you drop down to the Sea of Galilee, you're well below sea level, and it's pretty warm there. We mentioned also Mount Tabor in this area. It's an isolated peak, and it's south of the Sea of Galilee. It's over 1,900 feet above sea level. Contrast that with Mount Hermon at 9,000 feet above sea level. So one's a little under 2,000, the other one's 9,000. And it's just north of this next territory we'll mention, which is the Jezreel Valley. As we're thinking about coming from the north, Mount Hermon here, the upper and lower Galilee here, and then we have something coming across here this way, I guess it is Jezreel Valley, and also called sometimes the Plain of Esdraelon. That's more or less an east-west valley. It actually runs from northeast to southwest, but more east-west than north-south. It connects the coast with the Jordan Valley. It separates Samaria to the south from Galilee in the north, and it actually forms the easiest transportation corridor to get from the Mediterranean Sea to the Rift Valley. Above it, you have to go across the Galilee with all their hills, and below it, you have to go across the hill country. So, but if you go right through this Jezreel Valley, the terrain is actually fairly low. So as a result, an important trade route crossed from the coast over into the interior at this particular point. The south edge of the Jezreel Valley is marked by Mount Carmel and then a range continuing east from that. A long ridge, again, approximately east-west, rather as the Jezreel Valley is, south side of the Jezreel Valley, with a maximum height of about 1,800 feet. So again, much, much lower than Mount Hermon, but actually getting up around the same height as Mount Tabor is. This range forms a barrier to north-south travel, and a person traveling northward from, say, Egypt comes up the coastal plain, but when you get near this Mount Carmel, you've either got to go all the way over to the coast and kind of work your way around the end of Mount Carmel, which actually sticks out in the Mediterranean there, or you have to come back in a ways and go through one of two or three of the passes. Control of the passes was important in ancient times militarily. Remember that at the time of New Testament we're thinking about here, Israel is not an independent state, and Rome, in fact, controls everything on the east end of the Mediterranean until you get in to the Parthian Empire, so they're not so worried about it then. But in Old Testament times, the control of the passes was important militarily. The city of Megiddo is on one of these passes, and Revelation's Armageddon is actually a modification of Har-Megiddo, Hill of Megiddo, and controls one such pass. The plains north of Megiddo were, in fact, a site of many major battles over the course of military history. Jumping south now across the areas where Samaria and Jerusalem and that sort of thing would be. We come to the wilderness of Judea. This is a Badlands area. It's actually in the, what should we say, it's in the western side of the Jordan River, and so in the Rift Valley, more or less. It's actually in the rain shadow, I suppose, of the ridge of the hill country. And I use the term Badlands because it reminds me a great deal of the Badlands of South Dakota. It is hilly, but there's virtually no vegetation on it, not least at the tree level. A little bit of shrubbery and some rain during the grass during the rainy system. Well, this is an area where this combination of low rainfall, you're in the rain shadow of the of this ridge running down the hill country, combination of the rain shadow and a poor, rather chalky soil produces a area that is bad enough in regard to vegetation that's virtually uninhabited. So today, and probably through most of its history, it has been an area where nomads come in seasonally and graze their sheep while there's grass growing, and then get out of the area when nothing is going on. So territory used for grazing sheep and for grazing goats in the wetter winter season. One more area we'll mention here, and that is south of the hill country. The hill country eventually comes kind of to an end, somewhat south of Jerusalem. We have an area called the Negev. The King James Version typically translate that the south. don't recall now how some of the other modern versions translate that. It's an arid land south of actually the city of Hebron, which Jerusalem down, you would go down maybe 30, 40 miles to get down to Hebron, Jerusalem, Bethlehem, and then Hebron. territory is flat to rolling. The soil is actually pretty good, but now due to the latitude effect, getting out of the bottom of the north temperate zone, if you like, you are getting very little rainfall. Might for a moment stop and look at the zones, if you like, of our globe. You have the equatorial zone, and then you've got a tropical zones on either side of that, and then you've got the temperate zones on either side of that, and then you get up into a more subarctic type further northern area. And the transition between the temperate zone and the areas down closer to the equator has a rather low rainfall. So Negev area, rolling or flat, pretty good soil, very little rainfall. Even in ancient times, and now in modern times as well, certain inhabitants had figured out a way to actually grow crops there by concentrating water by certain types of tricks. A number of places you would have a valley that would catch rainfall, and the rainfall would then tend to run off rather quickly and deposit, therefore, a soil down in the bottom of the valley, and then the water would run off to the low side of the valley and out of the valley, and they'd basically put a dam in the bottom of the valley, and it would catch water for a little while and would pick up all the silt that had run off. And so you could then grow crops in that silty area. And whereas you might only be getting 2, 3, 4 inches of rain a year, you were getting your little farming plot down in the bottom was concentrating rainfall from a much, much bigger area. Well, that's kind of a quick tour then of the major regions of Israel from the north-south ones running from the coast inward from west-east, and then some of the peculiar individual features running from south to north. Say a word or two about the major bodies of water around Palestine. You have the Mediterranean Sea on the west, and the Israelites of Old Testament period were not really seafarers, but they did work as middlemen to a certain extent of people who were seafarers and who were bringing trade in from the Mediterranean or taking spices and other things out from Arabian areas or such, and so occasionally had engaged in trade in that particular way. Mediterranean Sea, large body of salt water, actually connected to the Atlantic over a way, 1,500 miles further west at Gibraltar. Palestine has few natural ports compared, for instance, with Greece or Phoenicia. And and Phoenicia was on the coast of the east coast of the Mediterranean further north. So the Jews were involved in trade only as middlemen. Then the bodies of water kind of actually in Israel. You had the Sea of Galilee or the Lake of Tiberias or Kinneret, various names given to it. A little lake that was perhaps 7 by 14 miles, something like that. Freshwater lake, surface is 600 feet below sea level, so lower even than Death Valley in the United States. Fed by the Jordan River, which basically its waters came out from Mount Hermon area. And then they still consider it the Jordan River when it runs out the other side of the Sea of Galilee and continues on down in the Rift Valley. The Sea of Galilee was important for fishing, both back then and even now, but its peculiar topography and climate was such as to produce some fierce storms. You're talking about a lake that's a few miles across, so it's big enough that you can get some substantial waves on it, not like the Mediterranean or anything. It's got a hot desert east of it. It's got Mount Hermon at 9,000 feet northeast of it. It's got this Rift Valley that runs north and south of it. It's got higher terrain to the west of it, and it's got the Mediterranean Sea west of that. So you've got weather systems coming in from the Mediterranean. You've got an area up here where cold air can be produced around the mountain. You've got the hot air over here, and frequently the combination of those produced some very fierce storms that arose in a very short period of time. So, Mediterranean Sea, Sea of Galilee. Then you've got the Jordan River. The river began on the lower slopes of Mount Hermon, descends about 2,300 feet in about 100 miles, not counting all the meanders of the river, but just the as the crow flies, if you like, southward from Hermon, and it flows through the Sea of Galilee and then on down to the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea, also called by the Romans Lake Asphaltitis, its surface is the lowest point on Earth, 1,296 feet below sea level, probably lower than that now because they've been using up a lot of the water for irrigation, and that has lowered the Sea of Galilee. But that was typically the kind of depth, elevation in antiquity and up until the big irrigation projects started in the last 30 years. The water's extremely salty. Fish can't live in it. People find it irritates their skin. But if you go swimming in it, which a number of people do, you float in it like a cork, and that is a rather unusual phenomenon, if you like. Its waters and the salt deposits were mined back in antiquity and today for various sorts of minerals, particularly salts of one sort or another. So a quick tour, then, of the major bodies of water around Palestine. All of these things we've talked about, the north-south regions and these little individual peculiar regions and the major bodies of water, they're all the same as they were in antiquity. I've left out perhaps one item, a very small lake north of the Sea of Galilee, Lake Merom, which I think still existed in some of the maps I remember seeing from the late 40s, but went in the after Israel began, after the Jews began to resettle land because it was good land that could be used agriculturally, and so is now farmland rather than water. Political features of Palestine, however, have changed drastically since New Testament times, And we're not going to deal with the changes that have taken place nor what's there today, but basically look at the political features back at New Testament times. So this would be more helpful in understanding the Gospels. So we're going to start with political divisions at the time in the ministry of Christ. We start, first of all, with Judea, and that's the territory that runs, well, at various times it's run all the way from the Mediterranean, but by this time it's back in a little bit from the coast and runs up and over the central ridge, the central hill country, around north and south of Jerusalem, basically. That was the old territory, the tribe of Judah. At this particular time, it had been expanded to include Samaria on the north, which still was known by that name, and Idumea on the south, which was also known by that name, but as kind of an administrative unit, often called Judea, Judea, which is obviously a modification of Judah. It was part of the territory that was ruled by Herod the Great during his reign, and I've here got that in my notes as 37 to 4 BC. There's some argument about the end point on that, but we'll not do anything with it here. And this was also then ruled when Augustus verified and modified Herod's will by Herod's son Archelaus from, let's say, 4 BC to about AD 6, and then ruled by the Roman procurators from 6 to 41, and then by Herod's grandson, Herod Agrippa I, from 41 to 44, and then back by the Roman procurators again from 44 to 66. The population of this Judea proper was mostly Jews, but Samaria mostly Gentiles, including some Samaritans, but lots of others, and Idumea, mostly descendants of the Edomites, who, however, had converted Judaism during the Maccabean period, and don't know to what extent how serious they were about that. North of Judea was Galilee, but this was the area west of the Sea of Galilee. This had once been the domain of the some of the northern tribes of Israel, and then after the Assyrians carried off the northern kingdom and such, it was for a long time the home of Gentiles until the Maccabees became dominant, 160 to say 63, and they repopulated it with Jews. It may well be that Mary and Joseph wound up in Nazareth as a result of their ancestors having moved back up in that area. We don't know really much about that. After the death of Herod the Great, when his territory was split up under his will, this was ruled by Herod Antipas, and he shows up in the Gospel accounts from, we think, 4 BC to AD 39, and then it's ruled by the Roman procurators from 39 to 41, not very long, and then by Herod Agrippa, 41 to 44, and then by the Roman procurators again. Some considered Galilee a hotbed of revolutionaries, and it certainly had some up there. Herod had some trouble with that, and the Romans certainly later in the first century, leading up to the Jewish revolt, had troubles with revolutionaries in that area. A narrow strip east of the Jordan River was called Perea, presumably from the Greek pariah, across, and was inhabited mainly by Jews by New Testament times. And I think basically the situation was rather like that of Galilee. It had been largely Gentile from the Babylonian captivity down to the Maccabees, and then had been repopulated. It had the same rulers as Galilee. So when Herod the Great was in control of things, this was part of his territory. And then when his territory was split up, this went to Herod Antipas. And when Antipas and Herod Agrippa I were not ruling it, then the Roman procurators were ruling it. There's another territory that had some Herodian rule, and that's typically called today the Tetrarchy of Philip, or Iturea and Trachonitis is another name that's given. It was a multi-ethnic region northeast of the Sea of Galilee and had mostly Gentile inhabitants. After the death of Herod the Great, because he had ruled over that, it was ruled by another one of his sons, Philip, from, let's say again, 4 BC to 34 AD, and then by Roman procurators and Herod Agrippa, as we've mentioned already before. So some of Jesus' ministry takes place in that territory as well, probably the feeding of the 4,000 and some miracles as well. A fifth region we should mention is a region called the Decapolis, Latin Greek for 10 cities, but it wasn't just 10 cities. The whole administrative operation of those areas, and probably very commonly in the ancient Near East, was that a city dominated territory around it. The Decapolis cities were a league of usually 10 Hellenistic cities. The number of cities in there actually went up and down some, and their city territories. And we now have some evidence that the territory of several of these cities included a piece of coast of the Sea of Galilee, so presumably they shared fishing rights and had their own piers and perhaps their own fishing fleets on the Sea of Galilee. The Decapolis would be mostly Gentile inhabitants, though, again, it's most likely, since they're Hellenistic cities, there were some Jewish people there as well. After the Romans came, after the Maccabean period ended, this was made independent of Jewish control. So it was never under the control of Herod the Great or of his descendants. So a quick tour then of the territories, political territories, if you like, around the time of Jesus. We might mention a few of the cities of Palestine during the first century AD. There was, of course, Jerusalem. Jerusalem located right up on the ridge in the hill country, so that not going too far west, you could look down and, I guess, see off in the distance where the Mediterranean would be. It wouldn't be very obvious. And going over east of Jerusalem, you could look down and you could actually see the Dead Sea, and you could certainly see the wilderness to the east. that was the Jewish, what we might think of as religious capital of Judea and Palestine. Herod certainly would have his palace there, but not his only palace there. Perhaps was not excited about being that area in the winter. You're up getting towards 3,000 feet, so he had some winter palace stuff down at Jericho, which was much nicer weather, and even down at Masada, we'll say something about Herod's fortifications here in a bit. The Romans did not consider this their capital of Judea while they were in control of the east. Herod himself had built a port city to the northwest of Jerusalem on the Mediterranean coast, and because Palestine did not have any natural harbors, you have a little sort of something where Carmel sticks out, but even that's not very satisfactory. Herod has spent a great deal of money to build an artificial harbor, put huge stones into water, use cement. Cement is as far back as we know, it's a Roman invention that might conceivably have gotten it from somebody else. And they had even figured out how to make cement that would dry underwater, which we have varieties of that will do that as well. So they had made sort of large jetties that would run out and made an area of calm water that you could bring ships into. And then they could ride out storms in there and not be mashed and such. So that became an important port during Herod the Great's control. And then after his death, the Romans kind of took this as a capital. So when their procurators, when their prefects, whatever, were ruling over Judea. They operated this as the capital. It was a city in which there were both Jews and Gentiles, and in fact the outbreak of the Jewish revolt against Rome spins out of a